Good evening and welcome to another episode of Boo, My Dad Says. My name is John.
And I'm Becca.
And we are your tour guides through the world of the paranormal.
We've got a whole lot of history, a whole lot of mystery, and a whole lot of weird.
So sit back, relax, and prepare for a spine-tingling time. Good evening and welcome to another episode of Boom, My Dad Says. My name is John.
And I'm Becca.
Oh my goodness, it's finally happened.
Boo, I'm back.
She is back in the chair and it feels so good, but it feels kind of weird too, because I don't really know what to do with myself now that I've got my
co-host. You've got to share your duties.
Well, I mean, I had Brady's help last week, you know, and he does a pretty good job, although he's not as good at handling the mic as well as you are, because I had to do a lot of audio work to kind of get him straightened out on his episode. But he is a lot of fun to have over there, and I do hope to have him back again soon.
Lovely. Well, I'm glad to be back. I did have several weeks in a row where I was out of town, and that usually does not happen. We had a trip at our church, a women's trip, and then the next weekend I was out of town with my best friend, and then...
Yeah, her best friend shanghaied her to go to Charlotte.
Yes, I was just going along for the ride. It was great fun. And side note, if you're in Charlotte, be sure to check out Village Tavern. It was the best steak I honestly think I've ever had in my life. It was incredible. We stayed at the Canopy, and Village Tavern was probably, I don't know, half a mile from there. But it was incredible. Definitely hit up the Village Tavern. Delish.
You see, that's what happens. She goes out of town and she gets steak and I get McDonald's.
I left him with the chicken nuggets.
Well, anyways, as always, folks, come check us out on our social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Just look for Boo, My Dad Says, and we are out there. This week, we also want to give a shout out to a brand new Patreon, Mr. Josh Bowling. Thank you very much for contributing to the show. And as always, dear, would you like to mention the personal messages? If you would like to email the show.
Yes. If you would like to email us, send us a story. If you'd like to email us, send us a story or just share anything with us, we would love to hear from you. You can email us at john@boomydadsays.com.
Hot mama.
Shut up. Hot mama's a tired mama.
Oh, my goodness. I'm tired, too. But anyways, see, she's rusty. She steps out of the chair for a month, and she can't remember her
A whole month. Exactly. A whole daggone month. And listen here, you can't remember what you ate for breakfast yesterday, so don't start on me.
I can, too. I had biscuits and gravy and eggs and bacon.
Well, just because that's like your favorite breakfast is the only reason you remember that.
Breakfast of champions. Mm-hmm. Booyah.
Boom.
Well, this week we are going to be going up to the Lexington, Kentucky area, and we are going to be doing a spooky walkthrough, quite possibly one of the most haunted sanitariums, hospitals, whatever you would like to call it, in the country. We are going to go to Waverly Hills.
All right. So Waverly Hills, it is situated there in Kentucky. And during the 1800s and the early 1900s, America was ravaged by a deadly disease known by many as the White Death, which was tuberculosis. This terrifying and very contagious plague, for which no cure existed, claimed entire families and sometimes entire towns. In 1900, Louisville, Kentucky had the highest tuberculosis death rate in America.
Wow, that's saying something.
That's a lot, yeah. Built on low swampland, the area was the perfect breeding ground for disease, and in 1910, a hospital was constructed on a windswept hill in southern Jefferson County that had been designed to combat this horrific disease. The disease continued to run rampant through the region, and eventually, with donations of money and land, a new hospital was started in 1924. This new structure, known as Waverly Hills, opened 2 years later in 1926. It was considered the most advanced tuberculosis sanatorium in the country, but even then, most of the patients succumbed to the disease.
Did you know how Waverly Hills got its name?
No, do tell.
It was actually named by, there was a school on that spot before it became the sanatorium.
Ah.
And the school teacher who was the first teacher there, she named it, and it was after like her favorite author or something like that. Hang on, let me get that. I have that right here. And I meant to show you that earlier because I thought it would be a really interesting piece. But the land was originally owned by a Major Thomas H. Haynes in 1883, and it was the family's home. And since the new home was far away from any existing schools, Mr. Hayes decided to open the local school for his daughters to attend. He started a one-room schoolhouse on Pages Lane and hired Lizzie Lee Harris as the teacher. Due to Miss Harris's fondness for Walter Scott's Waverly novels, she named the schoolhouse Waverly School. And Major Hayes liked the peaceful-sounding name, so he named his property Waverly Hills.
Ah, okay. Very good. There was no medicine available at that time to treat the disease, and so many patients were offered rest, fresh air, and lots of nutritious food. Sadly, the main use for the hospital was to isolate those who had come down with the disease and to keep them away from those who had not. Families were tragically divided with parents and even children, forced into the sanatorium with little contact with their loved ones. Treatments for tuberculosis were sometimes as bad as the disease itself. Some of the experiments that were conducted in search of a cure seemed barbaric by today's standards, but others are now common practice. Patients' lungs were exposed to ultraviolet light to try and stop the spread of bacteria. This was done in sunrooms using artificial light in place of sunlight, or on the roof or on open porches of the hospital. Since fresh air was thought to be a possible cure, patients were often placed in front of huge windows or on the open porches, no matter what the season. Old photographs show patients lounging in chairs, taking in the fresh air while literally covered with snow. Other treatments were less pleasant and much bloodier. Balloons would be surgically implanted in the lungs and then filled with air to expand them. Can we say negative? That ain't gonna happen. That's crazy. Needless to say, this often had disastrous results, as did an operation where muscles and ribs were removed from a patient's chest to allow the lungs to expand further and let in more oxygen.
It's really amazing how far healthcare has come in just a little over 100 years.
That's crazy town.
Yeah, I mean, in just 100 years, a little over 100 years, healthcare has come a long way.
It really has. That's insane. That you think that removing bones and muscles is actually going to help. Oh, let's give a little more room in there. This blood-soaked procedure was seen as a last resort, and many patients did not survive it. No duh. While the patients who survived both the disease and the treatments left Waverly Hills through the front door, many others left through what came to be known as the body chute. This enclosed tunnel for the dead led from the hospital to the railroad tracks at the bottom of the hill. Using a motorized rail and cable system, the bodies were lowered in secret to the waiting trains. This was done so that patients would not see how many were leaving the hospital as corpses. Their mental health, the doctors believed, was just as important as their physical health. There are many inaccurate reports as to how many people actually died during Waverly Hills decades of operation. Some claim tens of thousands died within the walls of the hospital, but this number is greatly exaggerated.
I've actually heard that number be as high as 65,000 people.
According to Dr. J. Frank Stewart, a former assistant medical director at the hospital, the highest number of deaths to occur at Waverly Hills in a single year was 152. By 1955, those numbers had dropped to as low as 42 deaths, and it's been estimated, based on death certificates that were filed, that approximately 6,000 people died there, dating all the way back to the original hospital records from 1911.
Yeah, that's a pretty wide dispersion from what legend says was.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily legend so much as it is just
Poor record keeping.
Poor record keeping and hype.
Well, I mean, that's what legend is hype. If you think about it.
Is that the definition?
Well, I mean, you know, legend, I mean, most legends take a little bit of truth and then it just kind of
expand on that.
It just kind of expounds. You know, remember, you ever played the telephone game with your kids in school? When you did kindergarten or, you know, and you tell the first kid something and it goes around the room. But when it finally comes back to you, you may have said, Johnny has three brown dogs. And by the time he gets back to you is Susie Bell has 256 kitty cats.
Ah, all right. Moving on. While far short of the numbers being tossed about in the legends, it's still a tremendous number of deaths to have occurred in a single structure. By the late 1930s, tuberculosis had begun to decline around the world, and by 1943, new medicines had largely eradicated in the United States. A small jump in the new cases did occur after World War II, and many soldiers returning from the war were housed at Waverly Hills. Dr. Stewart noted in his autobiography that many of the soldiers had cases that were so advanced that they did not live for more than a week after arriving at the hospital. In 1961, Waverly Hills was closed down but was reopened a year later as Woodhaven Geriatrics Sanitarium. There have been many rumors and stories told about patient mistreatment and unusual experiments during the years that the building was used as an old age home. Some of them have been proven to be false, but others have unfortunately turned out to be true. Electroshock therapy, which was considered once to be highly effective, was widely used for a variety of ailments. Budget cuts in the 1960s and 70s led to both horrible conditions and patient mistreatments, and in 1982, the state closed the facility for good. Is it any wonder, after all the death, pain, and agony within these walls, that Waverly Hills is considered to be one of the most haunted places in the country? The buildings and land were auctioned off and changed hands many times over the next few decades. They had a plan to turn it into a museum. They had a plan to turn it into a theater, into a chapel. They had all of this, and they had this $8 million project, this one developer did, and donations to the project fell far short of what was to be expected. And during the first year of an $8 million project, during the first year, only $3,000 was raised towards the effort, and the project was promptly canceled, of course.
You know what that project was, right? They wanted to build a statue of Jesus.
Like Christ the Redeemer, yeah. In Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah, it was supposed to have been like maybe 6 feet taller or something like that. It was supposed to be the tallest statue of Jesus in the world.
Well, that project was a $4 million project, and then they were going to turn the sanatorium into a chapel, theater, and gift shop for another $8 million. So it was a $12 million project, and they only raised $3,000. So so they went ahead and they wanted to have the property condemned so that the buildings could be torn down and redeveloped. And it was blocked by the county. And according to the rumor, demolition work was then done around the southern edge in order to undermine the structural foundations and collect insurance money. The scheme also failed, and in 2001, it was sold to Charlie and Tina Mattingly, the current owners of the property. And that is all I've got on the actual history, although I did find it incredibly interesting looking at pictures of it and knowing how they had the porches and stuff. I worked at the VA hospital here in Johnson City several years ago, and it is really, really interesting how one of their buildings looks very, very much like this. Of course, a little history of the VA. It was the Soldiers Mountain Home. It was built, the hospital area and the building that I worked in was set up very much like this, and to where even like these primary care providers' offices, all the ones on the outer edges all had that porch. And I asked somebody one time about it, and I said, so why in the world are there these porches out here? And it was for the very same reason, for tuberculosis, because it was such a common practice to make sure that they had fresh air, that they would be able to wheel their patients out there and let them, you know, have fresh air there in the mountains.
Or I know a lot of TB patients, too, would go out west because they thought the dry air
help. It looks incredibly, just the picture, just that kind of like, there's a middle and then two angled wings of the building coming out the other way.
Kind of like a bat wing kind of.
Looks just like the building I used to work in.
Wow. So you kind of worked at a East Tennessee version of Waverly Hills.
Sort of. That might be one to look into is the VA, some of the VA centers. Some of these ones that have been around. I mean, our VA has tunnels, walkways underground where you can get from building to building underground. It's pretty interesting, the history of some of these older facilities.
Well, we know several people that work there. They might be able to offer up some stories themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but considering we're at Waverly Hills right now, let's move on to some of the hauntings.
Sidetrack, squirrel. But anyway,
squirrel,
shiny object. The physical resemblance of it, and just those open porches on whole sides of the building. It just struck me as,
well, I'd say they were familiar. Probably built around a similar time frame, and
probably,
you know, the architectural designs, you know, kind of like how people wear clothing, you know, it's different times, different styles.
Back to Waverly Hills.
So over the years, the hospital, it's gained a reputation for being quite haunted. And the stories begin to circulate of resident ghosts. One is like of a little girl who was seen running around up and down the third floor solarium.
Solarium.
There we go.
Solarium. Solarium.
Solarium. And then there was a little boy who was spotted with a leather ball. And I think a lot of the legends say his name is Timmy.
Of course it's Timmy. That's such a good ghost name.
And he likes to play ball. And a lot of times I've read in my readings and stuff that a lot of paranormal investigators will bring balls and leave them there to see if he will play ball with some of the balls that are there. And then in the back of the building, there was a ghostly hearse that appeared where it would drop off coffins for the dead. And there was another story of a woman with bleeding wrists who cried out for help. And then there are other stories of slamming doors, lights and windows when there shouldn't be lights, and strange sounds, eerie footsteps in empty rooms. But I think what I want to jump to first is I want to jump to the fifth floor of the building. And that is a specific room up there called Room 502. And this story falls kind of in legend because it really can't verify it, but it's a really, really interesting story. But Room 502 was supposed to be like one of the nurses' stations, one of the nurses' rooms. Well, in 1928, there was a nurse who had committed suicide. She had hung herself in the room, and the story goes it was because that she was pregnant and she was single.
Bom, bom, bom.
And there have been stories of people who have seen her apparition in the room hanging.
Mm.
Now there was another nurse a few years later, and that was, let's see here, looking at my notes, do they have a date? 1932. Another nurse who had worked in the same room, he said she had jumped from the room or from the roof patio and plunged several stories to her death. And no one seems to really know why she jumped. Or there's also another train of thought that maybe she was pushed. So, you know, all they know is there is a lot of paranormal activity in that room. But what seems to, and I guess I get to play a little bit of a skeptic. I don't deny the paranormal activity, but some of the stories of what happened, especially to the nurse that hung herself, it really doesn't add up because there were stories of that she'd hung herself from a light fixture, which the light fixtures in the room, from everything that I've looked into, would not have been strong enough to hold up somebody. Then there was other stories of she had hung herself from a, using some of the water pipes that went through the ceiling. Well, during the 1928, there was no water pipes there. So all we really have to go on that is we know that there's paranormal activity in the room, but we can't seem to nail down what has happened to cause it as far as the truth. But as you know, in most legends, a little bit of truth can be, turned into some pretty wild stories. So I feel like this is one of those things where they're letting the haunting dictate the history instead of the history dictating the haunting. Mm. At least that's just my personal thought on room 502 there. But there are several other instances of things that have happened on the site. Let's see. And I'm looking at an article from the Southside Times that was written by Rick Hinton. And it said that his team made a trek through the dark first level hallway, and I was holding up the rear with a shadowy figure walking next to me. And I was assumed it was my teammate, Doug. And in what little I could make out, he was built like Doug anyways. And we had our flashlights off so our eyes could adjust to the dark. And we were silent listening, and someone tripped in the group in front of me, and I heard Doug up there laughing and making a comment. I switched on my light, and then there was nobody beside me. So that means we got some shadow figures roaming the halls of Waverly Hills. And I mean, there have been several stories of shadow figures going through there. And now, going back to the body shoot, and this one I found very interesting, and this was in the same article. The tunnel through the hill from the hospital to the road below was originally the entrance and exit for workers, but it also served to deliver supplies. It eventually graduated into the body chute where the deceased was transported after passing in the hospital. And they said they were standing at the top, and even a flashlight beam would not reach the bottom of the tunnel. So that's pretty dark.
That's really dark.
So while shooting a single laser beam to the bottom, it suddenly stopped upon something solid. And that something was making its way up the tunnel toward us. We could see the vague white outlines of a form, and we watched it grow closer until the form disappeared with the laser beam, then shooting down into the dark.
Oh my.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. And then the last thing that I found on there that I thought was, well, actually, I got a couple of more things here. On the fourth floor terrace, he goes, I was alone and watching a dark shadow follow me from within the inner hallway. It was playing hide and seek, and it would on occasion peek a dark head around the door frames. Wow.
A dark shadow figure. Wait, what?
Playing hide and seek with him.
Oh, dear.
You know, just kind of, he would look and he would look back and just, you know, kind of messing with his head, I guess.
Oh, my.
And then a lot of times that they felt like they were being watched while they were in there. So that was written, that was in the Southside Times. So that was actually in a newspaper. That's pretty pretty wild. And then let's see, I found another. Let's see, I mentioned there was a little girl, and they think her name was Mary. And then I know there was a spirit named Tina, but there's also another little boy that they've said was named Bobby.
Oh, Bobby.
Hello, Bobby. Well, Bobby.
Hello.
Oh boy, yeah, I know. So one of the last accounts that I want to talk about was an account that I found, and it was actually on the same article that had the really good history. It was called the Waverly Hills Sanatorium, Kentucky's Hospital of the Damned. And It was a really good article. And as you could tell, the history was great because that's what Rebecca referenced a lot of her history from. And this guy, he had went in and he did a one-night investigation. And, you know, he had several little small things, but I'm going to give his account of the icing on the cake, so to speak. So it was literally a dark and stormy night when we arrived at the hospital, and it had been raining all day. I was looking forward to seeing the place, no matter what the weather, and not because I was convinced that I would meet one of the former patients face to face. It was simply to experience the place for myself. By this time, I had traveled all over the country and had been to hundreds of places that were alleged to be haunted. I had felt just the same way before exploring all of them, so Waverly Hills was no different to me. It was just an old, spooky building with a fascinating history. The fact that it was alleged to be haunted simply added to the experience. I had long since abandoned the idea of expecting too much. So it sounds like this guy was a little bit skeptical. I mean, he'd done several ghost hunts, but he was never really expecting much. So after meeting with the owners, we went inside and started our exploration of the building. The building was almost silent. All that I could hear was the sound of our own footsteps, our hushed voices, and the drip of rain as it slipped through the cracks in the roof and splashed down onto the floor. I was given the full guided tour and saw various rooms, the treatment areas, the kitchen, morgue, and on. And we climbed the stairs to the top floor, and I saw the legendary room 502 as well as the lights of Louisville as they reflected off the low and ominous-looking clouds that had gathered above the city. The only floor that we had skipped over was the fourth, but my friend explained that this was the only floor in the building for which the entrance was kept locked, and he had saved it for last. When we finally arrived on the fourth floor, I got the distinct feeling that something strange was in the air. I make absolutely no claims of any psychic ability whatsoever, but there was just something about this floor of the hospital that felt different than any of the others. And I can attest to that myself. There was a few times that you just had that. When you're on like a ghost hunt, you just get that feeling that like, whoa, that the kind of like the hair on the back of your neck standing up.
Do I need to leave?
Sorry, dear.
I ain't doing this scary crap.
It's just, the hair on the back of your neck stands up.
I don't like that.
It tickles.
I don't like that.
All right. Moving on. What had been nothing more than just an old ramshackle and broken down building suddenly seemed different. I can't really put into words what felt so strange about it, but it almost seemed to be a tangible presence that I had not encountered anywhere else in the place, and right away, eerie things started to happen. We had entered the floor in what I believe was the center of the building. Behind us was a wing that I was told that was not safe to enter. Sections of the floor had fallen in, and this area was off limits to tours and visitors. The strange thing about it was that both of us clearly heard the sounds of doors slamming from this part of the building. I can assure the reader that it was not the wind either. The wind was not strong enough that night to have moved those heavy doors, and this clearly sounded as though someone was closing them very hard. When I questioned my friend about who else could be up there with us, he explained to me about how unsafe the floors were in that section. I investigated on my own and determined that he was correct. There was no one walking around on that part of the fourth floor. I switched off my flashlight and we walked down the corridor using only the dim ambient light from outside. The hallway runs through the center of the building, and on either side of it are former patient rooms. Beyond the rooms is the porch area that opens to the outside. It was there where the patients were placed to take in the fresh air. There was no glass ever placed in the huge outer windows, which has left the interior of the floor open to the elements ever since. On this night, the windows also illuminated the corridor thanks to the low-hanging clouds that glowed with the lights of Louisville. We walked down through the dark and murky corridor, and I began to see shadows that flicked back and forth. I was sure that this was a trick of the eyes, though likely caused by the lights of the wind moving something outside, but was where the corridor angled to the right that I got a look at something that was definitely not a trick of the eye. In order for the reader to understand what I saw, I have to explain that the hallway ahead of us continued straight for a short distance and then turned sharply to the right. In the early 1900s, most institutions of this type were designed in this manner. It was what was dubbed the batwing design, which meant that there was a main center in each building, and then the wings extended right and left, then angled again so that they ran slightly backward like a bird or bat wings. Directly at the angle ahead of us was a doorway that led to a treatment room. I only noticed the doorway in the darkness because the dim light from the windows beyond it had caused it to glow slightly. This made it impossible to miss since it was straight ahead of us. We took a few more steps, and then without warning, the clear and distinct silhouette of a man crossed the lighted doorway, passed into the hall, and then vanished into a room on the other side of the corridor. I got a distinct look at the figure, and I know that it was a man that was wearing what appeared to be a long white drape that could have been a doctor's coat. The sighting only lasted a few seconds, but I knew what I had seen. And for some reason, it shocked and startled me so badly that I let out a yell and grabbed a hold of my friend's jacket. I'm not sure why it affected me in that way, but perhaps it was the setting, the figure's sudden appearance, my own anxiety, or likely all of these things. Regardless, after my yell, I demanded that we turn on a light and help me to examine the room the man had vanished into. After my initial fright, I became convinced that someone was on the floor with us. My friend assured me we were the only ones there, but he did help me search for the intruder in an empty room with only one way in or out. There was no one there. Whoever that figure had been, he had utterly and completely vanished. And then they wrote, I doubt that I was the first person to see this mysterious apparition on the fourth floor, and it's unlikely that I will be the last. However, this sighting put Waverly Hills into a unique category for me that I will firmly state that I believe it is haunted. Usually for me to do that, I must have my own unexplainable experience that goes beyond a mere bump in the night or spooky photograph. In this case, I had actually seen a ghost, and at the time, I could count the ghost sightings I had on two fingers. Waverly Hills is haunted, and for me, seeing was believing.
Oh, wow. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy. I mean, you know, that whole, you know, just you just kind of that feeling that something is different, you know, that, and that's very, very telling. But yeah, there it is, ladies and gentlemen, Waverly Hills. I would love to go and do a ghost hunt there sometime. If anybody from SRS is listening, if y'all are going to do a ghost hunt up there, let me know, because I'd love to go with you guys. Or if there's any other paranormal investigation teams that would let a podcaster come with them, I'm your man. Well, dear, you're back in the saddle.
I'm back.
You didn't really miss a beat other than the email thing at the beginning.
Oh, shut your face.
But anyways, you have no idea how much I've missed you.
Oh, Sappy Sapperson.
Oh, Smoochy Smoochy.
I'm Peach Pit.
Love Muffin.
Yeah, barf.
All right. Well, guys, thank you all for listening to this week's episode. If you would like to support the show, you could go out on Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and review. And, or if you would like to help us financially, you can either You can help us out by looking for Boom My Dad Says on Patreon, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/boommydadsays.
So yeah, it's been a crazy couple of weeks. I guess I should have talked about this at the beginning, but we had had this conversation off and on pretty much since we got married. So 16 years almost, that we've kind of been off and on having this conversation of wanting to possibly foster and or adopt. And about a month ago, we had got home from church and we were just talking to the boys and saying, you know, yeah, we think this is something we'd like to do. What do you think? How would you feel? What are your thoughts on it? And they both were fairly supportive for the first time we'd talked to them about it, because we just kind of kept it just between ourselves so far. And
our oldest is definitely...
He loves little kids. He's so good with them. He always likes being with his little cousins.
Little bitty kids just absolutely think Brady is the bomb.
But anyway, so we had this conversation and we were like, well, gosh, if we did that, we would need some more space. Like we would need another bedroom. You know, we'd have to figure something out because where we're currently at, I mean, it's a lovely home, but it's not equipped for more than two children to have space. And so about 6 hours, so we kind of left it at that. And we're like, yeah, we'll think about it. We'll keep praying on it and to see what we want to do. And then about 6 hours later that evening, a neighbor reached out to our neighborhood Facebook page and just said, hey, anybody out there interested in selling their house? Cash offer, blah, blah, blah. So I kind of looked at John. I'm like, okay, do I message her back? Like, what do I do with this? And so I did. I messaged her and threw out a ridiculous number when she asked, you know, what we would be, you know, thinking about.
Yeah, because we were both kind of like, yeah, there ain't nobody going to like give us take what, us up
you know,
on that.
And it's one of these situations we don't have to move.
Yeah, it was just like a make us move kind of offer.
Make us a move, make a move offer. Well, they said, can we come look at it tonight? I'm like, no, honey, child. I got a dog and a cat and two children and absolutely not. You got to give me some time to prep. So they came later that week and they made us an offer before they walked out of the house. So we countered and back and forth and looks like we're moving in July. So it's been a little crazy around here. So maybe I'll be super curious what we're wanting to do. We're actually wanting to build and that is going to put us a little bit further behind. Like we'll be a little bit ahead of the curve in the fact that we'll be in an apartment for a little while, but that's okay. So it'll be super curious to see how he rigs up an apartment podcast studio. Maybe then I'll get my new mic. We'll see.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
I know, but merciful heavens. It will be interesting for sure. And that's a fact.
But yes, anyways, it definitely was a God thing, you know, that we had talked about the fostering or adopting. And then just like 6 hours later, this happened. I mean, it's almost like, you know, okay, you ask for it. Here's the door open. So
yeah, it was pretty neat. It was pretty neat.
Anyways, guys, thank you all for listening to our show. And I hope you all have a great rest of the week and good night. And God bless, my friends.